For the first time in a generation, tomatoes are being canned in Shepparton in Victoria's Goulburn Valley. It's the latest change at food processor SPC Ardmona, which was nearly lost in controversy a few years ago, but now is in the process of regeneration. Warwick Long has the story.
Change has come to SPC Ardmona.
I think if you walk through here 2 years ago and then walk through here now, you would probably get lost without some assistance. Just everything from where the canteen was to where the factory entrance was, they're not where they were anymore. So, yeah, at certain parts of the factory, it's definitely unrecognisable in just a two-year period.
The iconic SPC factory has sat in the middle of Shepparton for nearly 100 years. The town has grown around it, and now change has come to the factory floor. It looks different here. You can see it in the factory with the equipment being used. You can see it on the faces of the workers, and you can see it in the produce coming off farms to be processed on site. And for workers like David Frizzell, who have dedicated their lives to the food processor, it's exciting to see.
How long have you worked here, Dave?
I think it's 37 years, actually. And here, or Ardmona, or you know, Maroopna, and then merged in 2002, and then CC Amatil purchased in 2005, and I've been with us for that journey. So, yeah, I can definitely say this is really a high period of change.
Hard at work.
Battling cheap imports and rejected by the federal government, in 2014, SPC's future was in doubt. It was ultimately saved by a $100 million package, including $22 million from the Victorian government and $78 million from parent company Coca-Cola Amatil. Now that money is being spent, and one of the major new investments is a $30 million tomato line that the company hopes will help it take on cheap dumped imports of tin tomatoes from Italy. The new line has been put to use this season, and it's the prize piece of equipment for David Frizzell.
We used to run our tomatoes out of Maroopna, but obviously to reduce costs and to get economies of scale, we've brought a new tomato plant into the Shepparton plant and squeezed it in there. And so now you're seeing us with a tomato plant that can double the capacity as well as improve the quality of our tomato product. So that's what you've seen.
Let's talk about how it works now. If we start outside where there's these huge trucks with these huge bins of tomatoes on their back. Yeah. What happens from here?
Okay, so our drivers skillfully line up those trucks with three 13-ton bins on the back of them, and then we wash the tomatoes out. So that's the gentlest way to get the tomatoes out, and it's also doing a cleaning process.
So you're actually washing them out of the bin and into where you need them to go?
Yeah, so it's like a water trough from there, and then we can control the direction that it goes from there. So then from that, it goes up a conveyor belt where there's some more sprays just to get any more dirt or anything else off. And then it goes through a process whereby greens and stems are removed from the system. And then it'll go into the plant where we have some inspections. And then we'll do the colour sorting as well. And then we will go up to a peeler before the peeler, we'll have a size sorter to drop out the smalls, and they will go and be recycled into the juice or paste plant to collect everything. But then the good size fruit will go up to the peeler, so we're only, you know, using energy on peeling the fruit that we need to peel. Then from the peeler, if it's whole peeled, we'll go directly to the canned. If it's diced, then we'll go to the dicers, where that'll be, you know, diced up into good size, consistent pieces. Once again, we'll do a colour sort and then send them into the can, and then we've got a good, you know, quality product out the end of it. So it's cleaning, inspecting, sorting, peeling, dicing, canning and cooking.
Is it a simpler process, or is it largely the same to what was done in the past when SPC had done processed tomatoes at the Maroopna site?
It's certainly a similar process. Yeah, canning tomatoes is canning tomatoes, except the equipment that we use is much more modern and much more efficient in both the amount of energy we use, but also the quality of the product. You'll notice when we open those cans of product, you would have seen that the amount of foreign material and skins is much lower in the high quality product we're producing from this plant, quantity of blemishes. So this new plant is really doing a good job. Colour sorters and, you know, just more modern equipment process is similar, but more modern equipment helps us to be the world's best.
Yeah, and what does it let you do in terms of how many tonnes of tomatoes can you put through a plant like this?
So the old plant was capable of doing 30 tonnes an hour. This plant is double that, so it can do 60 tonnes an hour. So we can, you know, really get some economies of scale, not only because we've combined the plant in with the other plant where we have our overheads and our supervisors and quality teams, but also we can increase the throughput more significantly. So it was a really good investment.
The irony is that SPC has turned to its competition to get an advantage. SPC Ardmona has been fighting cheap imports of Italian tinned tomatoes, the producers of which it has successfully accused of dumping. But it was Italy where SPC turned to get its advantage in the tomato market. The plant and installation of the equipment was designed in Italy and doubles SPC's production from 30 tonnes of tomatoes an hour to 60. It's hoped this added efficiency will allow SPC tomatoes to compete with their competitors. David Frizzell says workers are happy to have the opportunity to compete.
I guess it comes down to the situation we're faced with 2 years ago. It was a case of survival. I don't think anyone questions the need or the desire to change. If it's a choice between having a job and going through some pain with change, we'll take the change any time. So now it's a case of, oh boy, what's next? You know, what's the next exciting thing going to come out of this plant?
And that's SPC employee David Frizzell speaking with Warwick Long. Like walking a barbed wire tightrope and occasionally falling off and rather painfully straddling it. There's an image for you. That's how the chairman of the Foreign Investment Review Board, Brian Wilson, has described his role at the centre of one of Australia's most heated political debates. Speaking at the major Food Futures Northern Australia Development Conference in Darwin this week, the chairman said recent changes to Australia's regulatory landscape are designed to provide facts and transparency. Our political reporter Anna Vito spoke with FIRB chairman Brian Wilson in Darwin.
So our role firstly is to ensure that the foreign investment that does come in is not contrary to our national interests. Our second role is to ensure that the various stakeholders, so this is what I mean when I talk about the barbed wire fence, the various stakeholders are comfortable with what's occurring, so that on the one side, foreign investors, foreign governments, Australian companies seeking foreign capital are comfortable that we have an efficient, welcoming system, and on the other, the Australian public in particular are comfortable that we have a system that does protect Australia's national interest.
And in your view, how comfortable are those people, those groups now? Because of course we've seen a lot of political debate, we've seen a change in the regulatory environment and a tightening up of exactly what you need to scrutinise in your role as the Foreign Investment Review Board. How has that been received by the people on either side of that barbed wire fence?
I think hopefully well. It's a matter of continuing the communication.
And of course, once it does come to you, it's the national interest test that is applied. There's been criticism of that test, that it's subjective, that it's sort of a bit mysterious and opaque, that it's not clear what exactly the board is assessing. Do you agree, or do you think those criticisms have some point? And what might the board be able to do in any case to address that perception, that concern?
No, I don't. In fact, I disagree very strongly. I think our undefined national interest test has served Australia extremely well.
In what sense?
Let me give an example. Back when the Income Tax Assessment Act was first put in place, I think 1937 or something, it was about 50 pages. It's now about 5,000. And it still hasn't caught everything. An undefined national interest test, which was put in place when the Foreign Acquisitions and Takeovers regime was put in place in 1975, has been able to adapt with the times. In the 70s, there was a lot of community concern around American investment in our manufacturing base. Now we encourage foreign investment in manufacturing. In the late 1980s, there was a lot of concern around Japanese investment in tourism infrastructure. Now I think we would be thrilled if the Japanese wanted to invest in tourism infrastructure.
But isn't that one of the problems? Isn't that one of the reasons for community concern? Is because the process that assesses the national interest is so opaque?
the national interest also changes. It changes according to economic situations in Australia and around the world. It changes in accordance with geopolitics. So if we think about how things that once upon a time might have been seen as difficult in national interest terms but no longer are, because they reflect community concern, they reflect Australia's position in the world, they reflect the sort of investors and the country of investment that is coming in, those things, because of those changes, might no longer be a national interest issue at all. And other things pop up from time to time to be a national interest issue. So national interest is not something that you can sort of freeze and say it's never going to change. Of course it changes.
The Foreign Investment Review Board, of course, is right at the centre of all of these decisions, but you're a body that we very rarely hear from. Do you see any merit in perhaps changing that, that FIRB might be able to calm some of the community concerns about this process if you are able to talk about why you make the decisions you make?
Well, let me first clarify. The Foreign Investment Review Board is an advisory body. The final formal decision maker is the Treasurer.
Who almost always, though, does what the FIRB tells him to do or suggests he should do.
And while it might be the case that you don't necessarily hear from us constantly, I would probably give a speech in Australia to one forum or another every couple of weeks. I visit foreign countries. I've visited China every year for the past 4 years to try to explain the situation. And as I say, to mediate between these different and sometimes diametrically opposed stakeholders. I think we are doing much more than we used to communicate. We have a website that's becoming increasingly populated with guidance notes. We give, as I have lots of forums with relevant stakeholders, including law firms and so on, who usually represent investors. But I would suggest to you, part of this is also what's interesting to the media and what's interesting to the public are stories of controversy, not things that are less so.
Your annual report, which was released on Friday, showed that there had been a significant, I think, $1.9 billion increase in the value of proposed projects coming to FIRB over the past year. Does that mean that concerns that this new regulatory regime may harm Australia's image in the eyes of investors is actually not the case?
Australia is the world's 12th largest economy. Over the last 25 years, we have ranked between 8th and 16th in terms of share of direct foreign investment flows. In other words, we're about batting our weight, and for certain forms of foreign investment, we are in competition. So, again, it's important that Australians keep in perspective the importance of foreign investment and that for certain types of investment we're in global competition. And it is important also that the other stakeholders, the potential foreign investors, understand that subject only to particular national interest concerns, we are, as the previous Trade Minister was keen to say, open for business.
And on that point, how does Australia's regulatory regime shape up against countries like the United States, like New Zealand?
From an international perspective, I think we shape up well. We are generally regarded as an open and efficient assessor of foreign investment.
Is that a stable view? Has that been the view throughout this debate and these changes?
I think generally, yes, it is a reasonably stable view, and in fact, if anything, we're probably improving by being more clear on exactly what and we're seeking to review and the criteria.
The other part of this, of course, is this new register, this new national register of foreign-owned farmland. A clickable map was how it was first sold when it was first promised way back in the last election campaign. Do you see the register as it exists through the ATO affecting your role in FIRB? Will it have any role? And do you think it should be public?
it's probably not for me to say whether to what extent the granular aspects of it should be public or to what extent it should be a little more generalised for public consumption. I think that having that register is a very good thing. It has bipartisan support, and what it will actually do is get the facts out on the table rather than the myths.
Will it be able to do that, though, if it just gives sort of a bird's eye view, a broad national percentage?
I think it's going to do much more than that. I mean, it may not be down to a, you know, hectare by hectare map of the country, but I think it'll be quite granular.
That's the chairman of the Foreign Investment Review Board, Brian Wilson, speaking with Anna Vido. I hope you've enjoyed the program this week. Big thanks to John Jacobs for our technical production. I'm Edwina Farley. Hope you can stay with us on RN.